Welcome along to the Matchbook Betting Podcast. It is the show dedicated to bringing you betting insights to help you make smarter and more informed bets. And we've got a great team assembled throughout the entire show, but particularly for our NFL. We'll get to the lads in a second. First of all, my partner in crime, Matchbook's big bet expert, Mr. Jesse May.
Good afternoon, Emmett. How's things?
Good, thank God. The head okay after some sessions with the Matchbook crew?
Yes, I was over in Cork, but now, thank God, back for the NFL. You know, back home for the game tonight.
Yes. You're also in Denmark, but we won't make any reference to the Ireland game. Moving swiftly along as we preview week 11 of the NFL in the company of ESPN's Cian Fahey.
Hello.
The godfather of the betting emporium, Mr. Neil Channing.
I'm still thinking about Cleveland.
It's funny you said that. I was just Cian, I think, had mentioned that he thinks that Kaiser actually has the best deep ball in the entire NFL. I mean, how about that? The worst team has the best deep passer. We actually serious about that, Cian.
Yeah, but like, there's a lot that goes into playing a quarterback. So just having a great deep ball doesn't make it good.
Also, I was going to say we should just ban the Browns from the podcast, but it's too much fun. It might cost us money, but it's too much fun. We got to have them in there. And finally, a man who knocked it out of the park last week on insights.matchbook.com. Two bets, two wins. And I believe the title of your article for this week is Biggest Bet of the Season. No spoilers. Brad Allen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Emmett. Pride comes before a fall.
A man of great humility returns to the podcast. All right.
I like the way that you you round up all your chips and push them straight back in. If last week had been two losers, would the title have been smallest bet of the season?
To be honest, I'm a little concerned. I had a good week last week, but this week I'd love the board. I've got the chunkiest bets I've had all season. So, you know, maybe
pile it on. All in.
All in.
They were talking about that at the Matchbook Traders Conference. They were asking guy, and when you have a model, when is it too good to be true? And the guy said that actually when the favorite gets too big, you kind of know that's where the model's broken.
I'm liking that idea, by the way. You can get more information from Brad, not only here on the Matchbook Betting Podcast, but also his articles on Matchbook for the NFL throughout the season. Insights.matchbook.com. There's great articles and great content there, not only on the NFL, but also on horse racing, football, and every sport you can imagine. Adam Chernoff contributes, and our very own Sully, Aidan O'Sullivan as well. There's some fantastic stuff there, so make sure you check out insights.matchbook.com. Whether you are a hardcore NFL fan like Cian Fahey, or you are a newcomer to the sport, everything is taken care of there for you at insights.matchbook.com, and particularly when Brad keeps knocking it out of the park. No pressure, but his first game is coming up. It's Cincinnati at Denver. Betting on Matchbook, Jesse.
Bengals at Broncos. Line 2.5. Denver minus 2.5. Over under 39. I've never seen a week with so many low totals. On some of these games, you don't know if it's the total or the handicap, actually.
Yeah, let's bring in Cian Fahey from ESPN, first of all, to preview this game. So two losing teams so far in the NFL, both sides with similar records, 3-6. How do you tee this one up for us?
Two disappointing teams, really. Two teams that have areas of real strength, but areas of real weakness that are letting them down. I think it's always difficult to bet on the Broncos weather team, and the Broncos are on this losing streak for a while now, and they've looked very bad in a lot of these games. But the matchup that's kind of, I think, that might determine this is going to be Von Miller going against Jake Fisher on the right side. Actually, I think Jake Fisher might even be out at this stage because they re-signed veteran Eric Winston, so he might play. Either way, the Bengals don't have any offensive tackles who can hold Von off, and this is the type of game where Von Miller could just take over because Andy Dalton doesn't make his offensive line better. Emmanuel Sanders looks great again. He's back after being hurt a couple of weeks ago. Demaryius Thomas is still pretty good. So I like the Broncos. The Broncos are at home. You're giving up 2.5, but I don't necessarily think the Bengals are good enough to justify that on the road. I don't think the Bengals are going to be a team that's talented enough to overcome all the issues they've shown off this year.
Why are the Bengals having such trouble running the ball?
Well, it's the offensive line. Everything comes back to that offensive line. They let Kevin Zeitler go from right guard. They let Andrew Whitworth go, who's obviously having a great season in Los Angeles with the Rams. And then you've just got this. It kind of has a layered effect on the whole offense. If you can't throw the ball, it's easier for teams to focus on the running game. And when you have bad offensive linemen, it's very difficult to get a guy like Joe Mixon in space. Russell Bodeen was one of the worst centers in the league last year, maybe the worst center in the league. And he's kind of remained on from last year's group. And you don't really want to retain the worst of the guys that you've got and then try and build around him with other guys who were unproven and proved to be bad. So it's kind of shut everything down.
Shots fired. Shots fired at the Bengals center. Right, Brad, you're quite keen to talk about Cincinnati Bengals at Denver Broncos. What's your angle into this one for us?
Yep. As usual, I agree with Kian. I think the Bengals offensive line is going to get good old-fashioned mauling up front from Von Miller and his boys. We talk about a lot, you hear a lot, oh, buy low. And it is quite difficult to do because, you know, you shouldn't try and catch a falling knife. You cut yourself because you don't know when they're going to stop falling, essentially. But I think this is a good week to get back on the Broncos. So first of all, as mentioned, they've got that big matchup advantage. But I think they're kind of underrated based on all these blowouts in recent weeks. So over the last month, they've given up 50 and then 40 to the Patriots. So they played three road games in a row, all against tough opposition. They had the Chiefs, the Eagles, and the Chargers in there. So three road games in a row against kind of top half opposition. And then obviously last week, Patriots and Bill Belichick off a bye. And they didn't look that bad in that game, to my eye. They settled for three field goals. They gave away 17 points on special teams, which you cannot win doing that against the Patriots. You will lose. But they did move the ball. As I say, they got into field goal range three times and they moved the ball a bit. And so it's a very different prospect suddenly going from those very tough matchups to going up against the Bengals who can't move the ball. They could barely move the ball except for a couple of big splash plays against Tennessee. And this Broncos defense, it's a proud unit. I mean, Von Miller, Aqib Talib, Chris Harris, they've not suddenly lost their talent. They're still an elite unit. They've just been put in bad positions against elite opponents the last month. And I think they'll bounce back in a big way.
You sound very, very confident. Is this going to be...
I'm in!
Yeah, I'm now going to go for the spoiler. Does this mean this is the game you're talking about on Matchbook, on your article?
It's not, actually.
This isn't even your big bet?
This means there's even more money to make. Fantastic! Jesse and myself are going to lose control with the charity bets later on. We're going to go out of our minds. Now, that's your view on the game. The thing is, in the production meeting, Neil Channing was also quite keen to talk about Cincinnati at Denver. So, Neil, do you have a similar view to Brad?
I definitely don't disagree. I mean, I think that Cincinnati's running game has been pretty disappointing, and that makes them quite one-dimensional. I mean, they're only average, really, at passing the ball. So, it makes it pretty easy for teams to defend against them, and it makes it hard for them to score. It's easy to knock Denver, but it wasn't so long ago that they won a Super Bowl by just having a really good defense and not much of a quarterback. And, they're not that different from that in a lot of ways. I thought it was interesting what Kian was saying about the center. It's probably the most underrated player in the NFL. I know a lot of the syndicates, when there's an injured center or whatever, they like to bet against those teams, on the basis that it's something that the market doesn't really tend to appreciate. I was looking at the total, though. I mean, in absolute terms, these days in a passing league, it looks quite low. It opened up 40, it's down to 39 now. I think you might be able to shop around and get 39.5. But I do think under is a good bet here. For the reasons that the other guy said, really, that Cincy are going to really struggle to move the ball at all. They're 31st in the league rushing. They get 3.1 yards a carry, which is pretty poor. Denver have a decent defense. They don't have much of an offense either. Just a few trends. If you bet. I went back with Denver. I only went back to a post-Manning era because, they used to be a big over team maybe 6 years ago. But in the last season of Manning and since Manning, they've become very much an under team. As a home favourite since Manning, they've played 16 times and it's 10-5 and 1 to the under. In games since they lost the previous game, since Manning, 10-5-1 to the under. If you look at games where they were favourite since Manning, 18-8-1 to the under. If you look at Bengals games, I went back a bit further with them just to give a bigger sample. Since 2010, road Bengals games, 36-27-1 to the under. And all games where the Bengals were a road dog went under 22-17. I just can't really see that Cincy are going to score too many at all here. And Denver, you know, they're not like a 40-point team. I could easily see this being being low scoring. So I like under basically.
Unders for Neil in Cincinnati
at
Denver.
Can I jump in?
Of course you can, Brad.
Jump in, Brad.
Can I jump in with one more trend?
I think you
might like this one, Neil. I'm not a huge trend man.
I'm writing it down.
It's teams playing at home that have given up 35 or more points in their last two, and have conceded more than 80 total in their last two. The under is 26-3-1. So at the last 30, the under's 26 winners in there.
I mean, you can see why, can't you? Because they focus all their attention on not conceding in the next game. And they maybe play a much more conservative game plan. That would be the logic of why that works. I mean, a lot of trends, people say, you're just backfitting stuff and you're going back for, you know, what does it matter what happened 10 years ago? But when you can see something that has a logical reason why it's happening, then I love a trend. Now, that's a good one.
You do love a trend, and regular listeners to the show will know that as well. But it's nice to hear Brad back you up with another one there as well. That's Cincinnati at Denver. It's 9:25 our time on Sunday. I have a feeling I know what Brad's big bet of the week is, so I want to save that. Keane's quite keen to talk about the next game that we're going to bring up, and that is the Rams at the Vikings. Let's get the betting on Matchbook from Jesse.
Thunderdome. Let's see. The Rams, Minnesota Vikings -2.5, similar to the last one. Over-under total a little bit bigger, 45.5.
6 o'clock our time, 7-2. Again, two teams with equal records, 7-2 Rams, 7-2 Vikings. So Goff has been asked quite a lot in the press in recent weeks, Keane, about last season's understudy, quarterback rival, Case Keenum. He's ended up at the Vikings, and to everybody's surprise, has done kind of all right, really. And Goff does not like being asked about him. Goff versus Keenum, Rams versus Vikings. Set it up for us.
I love that you focus on the quarterbacks. I'm about to not talk about the quarterbacks at all. The Rams last week were, I thought they were actually quite lucky. I know they blew the Texans out, basically. But if you watch that game and go through the first three quarters, the Texans' defense largely shut the Rams' offense down. They had three drives in the first quarter. They didn't gain yards on any of them. They didn't get a first down on any of them. One of them began in the red zone, so they got 3 points. They got a field goal. They kicked two more field goals before the end of the game, end of the first half, and one of them was a 50-plus yard field goal, so it was a long field where they had a good kick return, I believe. The game kind of broke open when the Rams hit that play to Robert Woods. And the only reason they hit that play was the Texans defense changed their game plan up and they went in search of a safety because the Rams offense was backed up. And that created that one-on-one for Robert Woods against Jonathan Joseph, and it was wide open throw for Goff. The game kind of blew up then. They got another drive that started in the red zone. They got a big plays from Sammy Watkins and the Texans defense fell off completely and it became a rout. But the Vikings defense is really, really good, and the Vikings offense shouldn't set the Rams up in good field position the way the Texans offense did last week. And I just think they have greater balance. They have a better defense. You can run on the Rams defense if you run on them properly. If you commit to what you're doing in terms of using Latavius Murray between the tackles, trapping the defensive line so you can get bodies on the linebackers, and that will work throughout the game. So I feel pretty confident that the Vikings, especially because they're at home as well, I feel pretty confident that the Vikings are going to win this game. And I think it could be, the line is 2.5, but I don't think it's going to be one of those ones where it's going to be close. It might be a 7, 8, 9, 10-point victory for the Vikings with relative ease.
Wow. The Vikings have, I mean, it's no surprise now, they've been kind of the dark horse of the season. But after several injuries, particularly to the starting quarterback, people started to discount them, and yet they still continue to win games. And this is with Peterson, probably for the benefit now that running back Adrian Peterson is no longer there. But are you surprised with how Minnesota have thrived this season?
Not really, because the roster is so talented. Like the only reason that game last week was close against Washington was because Case Keenum decided to try and throw the ball to defenders all the time. And he played relatively well for the most part. His four touchdowns, like that was largely about scheming. One was a screen pass. One was a hard play fake where the tight end is wide open because of a great play design. One was a rolling pocket where Stephon Diggs is wide open again on the left side. And one was a good throw where he just dropped back and the quarterback made a play. But besides that, he threw the ball to defenders four times and Washington just couldn't take advantage of it. And the real thing that makes me really optimistic about this, that defense played quite well overall against Washington. And they weren't doing it with Everson Griffen. And Everson Griffen, for me, has been the defensive player of the year this year. He had a sack in every game that he's played in. He's constantly creating pressure, disrupting play designs, and he's a great run defender. So I don't really think, and I don't think Andrew Whitworth is going to shut down Everson Griffen the way he has some other edge rushers. And that's going to lead to a lot more pressure on Goff, a lot more pressure in the passing game. It's going to put more pressure on McVay to create yards, to create easy yards for the quarterback. And I just don't think you can do that against a defensive front that has Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, Linval Joseph, Daniel Hunter, Everson Griffen, and then one of the better secondaries in the league.
And the final question for you is, when Hard Knocks were on last season and they were making the big deal about the Rams switching to Los Angeles, they had that huge big poster outside the stadium of Jared Goff. It's like, come see number one draft pick, Jared Goff, superstar. And of course, he bombed last season. A lot of people feel he's living up to his promise now and that he is going to be a top NFL quarterback. You specialize in NFL quarterbacks and you're well worth following on the Tweet Machine. Is he hyped up this season? Is he taking advantage of how the offensive team have been setting up their plays? Or is he really starting to fulfill that potential?
So we tend to judge quarterbacks based on their production rather than their performance. And their production is largely tied to their supporting cast and their system and their setup and their opponents. Jared Goff has gone from being a complete disaster as a rookie, a guy who would literally drop back in the pocket and beat himself. There were many times where if there was any kind of pressure, he would turn around and try and run backwards like Russell Wilson, but he's not Russell Wilson, so he can't do that. He would miss wide open receivers. He would make plays, routine plays that you would expect any quarterback to make, and he wouldn't make them. This year, he's not doing that anymore. He's taken that step forward where he's making the plays you'd expect him to make. But that has to be put in great context. You have to understand, he's gone from being an awful quarterback to being probably a below average quarterback, a little bit of a subpar quarterback. I went through all of his touchdowns yesterday, and I think he has 16 touchdowns, and I think six of them came as screens or packaged plays, which are basically screens. So you're getting that little bit of a boost from the offense around him. As an individual passer, as a technician, as a decision maker, he still has a ways to go. One of the fascinating things, actually, that Mark Bullock, who covers Washington, he's English, but he covers Washington, just does X's and O's and stuff like that. He noticed on one of those sound effects videos on NFL.com that Jared Goff is doing a lot of audibling, but it's not actually audibling. What's happening is Sean McVay is rushing them to the line of scrimmage. And if you understand in the NFL, the communications in the helmet cut out at 15 seconds of the play clock, Sean McVay is getting them to the line of scrimmage so fast that when the defense lines up, Sean McVay is actually calling the audible. And then Jared Goff gives it, and it looks like he's doing the audible, but it's actually Sean McVay. It's kind of a fascinating thing. It's a crazy thing for someone to be doing, because it has to happen really quickly.
Isn't that one of the problems? He didn't do that in college, and then they were trying to teach him how to do it in his first season, and he just couldn't seem to pick it up. I mean, I know it's a completely different level, but that's a fascinating insight as well. I just wanted to talk about him briefly because...
Doesn't it also mean that the quarterback finds out the play about 1 second before the ball gets hiked?
Exactly.
That seems like you'd want like at least a few seconds to think about what the play is while you're telling it to people.
Just because he's a number one draft pick and they're 7-2, I thought it was interesting to go into him, particularly from a betting perspective for the rest of the season, because some people might think, oh, this Jared Goff, he's finally found his feet. Keen fight, not exactly convinced. Neil Channing, we bring you on for your expertise in betting. We bring you on for your expertise in over-unders, which you normally crush. Today, though, you want to talk about the weather.
I think we have spoken in the past on the podcast about weather, but it's worth reiterating. A lot of people sort of talk about this time of the year in the NFL. They start thinking about, the northeast of America. It can get quite cold. You can get snow. You get a lot of rain in games. And people get a bit carried away with stuff like that. But there's one thing that I would never really get carried away with, and that's wind. I think the wind has a way more important when you're betting totals than a little bit of rain. which most teams seem to be able to cope with. This week there's a few games that might well be affected by some wind. For example, I think in Cleveland I had a forecast 21 mile an hour gusts expected, the wind blowing in off the lake there. The total opened 38, that was down to 37. If you go to New York, what they're looking at, 15 mile an hour winds. The Giants host Kansas City. The total has actually gone up in that game from 43.5 to 44.5. Another one where they think that, you know, obviously traditionally the windy city, Chicago, 14 mile an hour gusts. The total there has gone down from 44 down to 41 since Monday. Obviously it's a big factor in the totals, and I just urge a bit of caution. Check the forecast, have a look. There might be a couple of others. I think Green Bay might be a bit windy this week. Possibly Houston as well. I don't know. I know Brad was playing a few totals this week. Have you looked at the wind, Brad?
Yeah, the wind is the kind of key factor in that big bet that I mentioned in the column. It was the under in Cleveland. It's meant to be, 20 plus mile an hour winds. And I think over the last 190 games odd with winds of more than 15 miles an hour, the under's hitting at 63%. The average point scored is something like 35.5. So I have backed the under in that game, and it also really favours Cleveland, I think, because they've got the obviously. So both sides are going to have to run the ball, like yards per attempt. Everything just drops off a cliff as soon as it gets that windy. So Cleveland's got the number one rush defence. So you know that's going to really help them. Whereas the Jaguars, they're kind of famous for their pass defence. Well, that's not much use in this game because no one can pass it anyway. So I think the matchup favours Cleveland as well. And obviously with diminished scoring, the points become more valuable. So Cleveland plus 7.5, that's another chunky bet for me.
Hold on a second. We're going to get to your final game. But are you telling me that your biggest bet of the entire season is going on the Cleveland Browns?
It's going on the under.
Hey, Brad, just a quick question on that. I know that a lot of people don't like teasers, but in this particular, would this be a situation where you might actually consider one, or do you ever consider them, taking those two kind of correlated ones?
I don't know where you can get access to teasers in the UK. I don't know if anyone can find a way to double.
Never seen that.
It's very hard to get teasers in the UK. I would generally say, though, if you're going to play teasers, but just to explain for people that maybe not familiar with that, that's where you get to move the line on two games by 6 points away from the line on both games, but you only get paid at 10 to 11 for having a double. So the best time to use teasers, the most advantageous, is when you can move through the key numbers. So if you find like an 8-point favorite and make them into a 2-point favorite, then you've come through those key numbers of 7 and 3, and that's generally the best time to play a teaser. So it's not so great in that example with Cleveland, where you're taking an underdog. You're not really going through such key numbers if you just add 6 to the 7.5 you're already getting.
Having mentioned the fact that poor Neil lost his bet last week on the Browns, and we were joking about the fact that, maybe we'll just ban the Browns in the podcast, but it's too much fun. Brad Allen, who has been red hot this season, then announces, my big bet of the week is going to be on the 0-9 Cleveland Browns. I'm going to go back in again. Nobody learns, but maybe this week, maybe in week 11, this is the time where we actually make money from them. The one that you want to talk about, though, Brad, is the Lions and Bears. So let's bring in Kian Fowley from ESPN for analysis on this after we get the betting on matchbook from Jesse.
Nitty gritty inner city, Detroit, Chicago, Bears plus 2.5 at home. Over-under is 41.
Lions looking for the third win in a row at Soldier Field as they take on the Chicago Bears. Kian Fahey, tee it up for us.
I don't know. Based on all that wind talk, it might not be much of a game that I can analyze. it's a difficult game, to be honest, because still don't really know what you're getting from Mitch Trubisky from drive to drive. He's made some outstanding plays. He's made some problematic plays. The offense as a whole is very limited. He had one outstanding throw for his touchdown last week, and it came on first down, but they rarely throw on first down. They like to run a lot on first and second down because of how limited he is as a quarterback. that's kind of something you've got to come to terms with while looking at Matthew Stafford and his inconsistency and the Lions' limited running game as well. So if this is going to be a game that's heavily affected by wind, you've got two really strong iron passers, but you've got two guys who want to throw the ball downfield. Stafford throws a lot of short passes, but it's not necessarily something they're great at doing. I think I would probably go with the Lions, but this is a tough game to figure out.
So Keane would probably just about side with the Lions, but Brad, you have cracked this for us. Explain your work.
Yeah, again, it's the wind's the big factor. And just to kind of reiterate that, it is underrated by the market. Last week, the windiest game was in Tampa Bay, the Jets and the Buccaneers. And the total was bet up all week from like 41. It closed at 45. So, you know, huge, huge money on the over, kind of ignoring the fact that they were 50 mile an hour winds. And I kind of, you know, as soon as they showed the game on Red Zone, I kind of tweeted out live bet that under. Because it was still at 44.5, and obviously they were 3-3 at half, and I think there was 25 total points. For some reason, the market just kind of doesn't seem to take this into account. So again, this game, the under is a good bet, even at 41. And I think it's going to favour the Bears here. As you say, they love to run the ball. If in a dream world, Trubisky's throwing the ball 8 times, and you know they Jordan Howard 30 carries up the middle, they're happy doing that. Whereas Stafford and the Lions, they can't run the ball. They're throwing the balls coming like 65% of the time, which isn't really going to work with that wind. And they've got the added distraction of Thanksgiving coming up. They've got a huge game with the Vikings and the early Thanksgiving slot. And I think they could be forgiven for looking ahead to that one. And the Bears could nick this one off them, I think.
I'm liking the sound of that, particularly from a man who is in red hot form. That is our preview of NFL Week 11. Hopefully, it's going to be a profitable one for us as well. My thanks once again to Matchbook's Brad Allen.
Cheers, Emmett.
We're going to talk to Neil Channing a little bit later on again about the racing at Cheltenham this weekend. The open meeting is on, and it's always a fantastic one. Neil's got one for us in the big race of the weekend, so Neil, we'll chat to you a little bit later.
Lovely.
And from ESPN's Kian Fahey, thanks very much for joining us. We'll chat to you all again next week.
Thanks,
guys.
Premier League returns after the international break. I don't really want to talk too much about it, and neither does We Love Betting's Mark O'Hare.
Oh. Hi, guys. Yeah, terrible week.
Still recovering. Well,
not if you were on Sweden, like the charity podcast. I mean, and nearly with Northern Ireland as well.
It's the only bright note, Jesse, and I'm glad you've cheered us up with that, because to be fair, Mark Stitchcomb knocked it out of the park. Mark's writing articles for Matchbook, which you can read at insights.matchbook.com. Hear him on the podcast, of course, weekly as well. And we would have had the Northern Ireland result if it wasn't for that pesky referee.
Hi, Emmett. Fantastic week. Cheers.
Well done, my friend.
I'm surprised you're awake. Weren't you up watching the Peru-New Zealand match or something like that?
Yeah, I did watch that last night. It was quite disappointing that Chris Wood wasn't fit enough to start either game. I think he could have done some damage to that Peru back line. So, yeah, fairly disappointing on that. But overall profit for the weekend, so it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, and taking on an Italian side, I know they haven't been great in qualifiers, but like, it's 50 years since they haven't played in a World Cup. You betted confidently against them, and cheerio, Italy. Sweden make it through, and we make a profit. Nicely done. Let's see if we can repeat that feat this weekend. The first game we're going to talk about is the London Derby. Sky Sports are already running the promos for this, and they're basically saying these teams hate each other. No one's going to argue with that. They do. Arsenal against Tottenham, 12:30 on Sky Sports 1. Sky Sports 1? That doesn't exist anymore. Sky Sports Premier League and Sky Sports Main Events. There we go. Betting on Matchbook from Jesse.
It's pretty tight in the 1/2. Arsenal's a slight favorite. The handicap is 0, but you'll have to lay 5-6 if you want to bet Arsenal there. The over-under total is 3.
Arsenal a favourite against Tottenham. Mark Stitchcomb, take it away.
Yeah, I think the prices are about right. After you factor in home advantage, it basically says that Spurs overall are a better team, only slightly, but I think we happily agree with that. 12:30 kickoff on a Saturday after the international break, I don't think really bodes too well for entertainment. Obviously, players been all over the shop. On international duty, so I think that could play its part. Tottenham have got a few issues over various players, Kane, Ali, and Winks. they all withdrew from the England squad. I think they'll all be fit, but they're going to be definitely without Wanyama and probably without Alderweireld and maybe even Lloris. So I think, Mark, it could be a case of safety first for Tottenham. And we actually discussed this match last time these two met in April at White Hart Lane. And I mentioned that time that the head-to-head in this record, especially since Pochettino's arrived, that there aren't many goals, not as many as there used to be, especially now that Tottenham have probably got the best defence in the league. Only one of the last 11 have gone over three goals. The average is only 2.27. And last time we backed under three goals and it finished 2-0 to Spurs, and that's my angle again. The expected goals in this fixture last season was just 1.46. So I think we'll see a low-scoring encounter here, and I reckon if we post up, we could probably get about 1.95.
Low-scoring 1.95. Jesse, can we get that?
I think we'll probably get around 1.9 anyway, but maybe even better. Maybe the market's moving, yeah.
Yeah, under three, anything around about 1.9, I think, is a pretty good bet. Last time we backed it around about evens, I think 1.9 is still a good price.
Excellent. Okay, that's Mark Stitchcomb. Let's bring in Mark O'Hare. So you want to talk about a Saturday game as well. Palace against Everton. This is a 3 p.m. kickoff. The betting on Matchbook, Jesse.
Crystal Palace v. Everton. Crystal Palace, 2.5, well, maybe 2.55 you get in the middle there at home, minus a quarter on the handicap, and over under a little lower, 2.25 there.
So Everton's search for a new manager continues. David Unsworth remains in charge for now, but we know that they desperately want to get Marco Silva, and Watford are saying no to that. And we've got Roy Hodgson trying to have his influence on Crystal Palace. They're at home. Mark, which way do you want to approach this game?
I want to be with Crystal Palace. I do like Roy Hodgson, despite his, you know, less than satisfactory time with England and Liverpool. I still think he's a decent coach. I also think Crystal Palace haven't been as bad as their results and league position suggests. There has been some green shoots and some decent signs of encouragement under Hodgson. They've taken 4 points in the last two games at Selhurst Park. That's including beating Chelsea as well, which was fairly convincing. And in their last game before the international break, they went away to Wembley and put on a very brave show and only narrowly went down to Spurs. So Hodgson has already pretty well got them organised defensively, which is always really encouraging when you want to side with a relegation battler. And I think the 2 weeks on the training ground really will have helped Crystal Palace further. Now there is a slight concern. Ruben Loftus-Cheek is a doubt after picking up an injury in the week, and that's a bit of a shame. But Christian Benteke is rumoured to be close to a comeback now, so if he does come back into the fold, that's a big coup for Palace. And of course, having Wilfred Zaha back to full fitness has really helped as well. So it's worth saying really that Crystal Palace, I said they've probably been a lot better than their results and league position suggests. They've only scored 4 league goals this season. That's obviously the worst tally in the Premier League, but if you look at the expected goals rate, they've actually eighth in the table there with 13.81. So there's a huge deficit there, which suggests that they've been a lot better in these games than perhaps their results have shown. And I do think it's probably the perfect time to play this Everton team. You've mentioned there Marco Silva. Silva, Allardyce, Dyche and Unsworth have all gone into odds-on quotes at some point in the last 2 weeks. And you just have to question the leadership really at Everton as to what's going on. Why would you sack Koeman if you didn't have a plan in place as a replacement? It seems really bizarre. On the field, things haven't been much better. Of course, Morales and Schneiderlin were sort of banished from the first team before that game against Watford. They were 2-0 down, came back and got a 3-2. I'm still unconvinced about them. They haven't won in 13 away games. They've only scored 3 goals in the last 8 away games. And they haven't actually kept a clean sheet at all since the opening weekend. Only West Ham have conceded more goals. And surprisingly as well, I thought anyway, they've not been great when travelling to sort of Premier League strugglers. If you look at last season's records, they only won 1 game in 6 when travelling to bottom 6 teams. So I'd want Palace on side on this. I was hoping to get Palace around sort of scratch 0 start on the Asian handicap, around the 1.75 mark. I think it's more closer to 1.7 at the moment, which is a bit of a shame. But even still, I'd like Palace with the quarter goal handicap, because I certainly don't see Everton winning this match, and I think it's all within Palace's range to get a result.
Strong.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, strong vote of confidence for Crystal Palace from Mark O'Hare. Let's go back to Anfield. 3 p.m. kickoff. Betting on Matchbook, Jesse.
Liverpool, Southampton, big favorite there. Liverpool won shorter than 4-6 anyway in the 1-2, -1.25 goals, and the over-under's pretty hefty, 2.75.
So it's a 3 p.m. kickoff. It's going to be live in Ireland on Sky Sports Premier League. Liverpool against Southampton. Mark Stitchcomb, why did you highlight this game from a betting perspective?
So this is pretty much going to be a game of attack v defence, particularly with Southampton's appointment of former defender Mauricio Pellegrino, who was briefly at Anfield under Benitez. Mm-hmm. Southampton is a sort of team that Liverpool struggle against, you know, a defensive low block team that won't leave much space for the likes of Salah and if Mane's fit. And they actually met four times last season and it finished 0-0, which I was at, 0-1, 0-1 and 0-0, which I was at as also. And looking back further at Anfield, the games have finished 1-1, 2-1, 0-1 and 1-0 since Saints returned to the Premier League in 2012. So Liverpool really struggled against Southampton, which is probably why we keep signing all their players.
You're one of the few people, Mark, who attends a football match and hopes there's no goals.
Yes, if I back 0-0, but unfortunately I hadn't in those games, so that was quite frustrating. I think I was too busy nursing a hangover.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Southampton have got... I'm hoping basically that Liverpool score a couple so it just ends the Van Dijk chat, because he's not as good as 70 million suggests. Anyway, they've got Aurel Romeo and Mario Lemina that sit just in front of their back four, and they're a fantastic shield. I think they'll do a really good job stopping the balls, getting to the likes of Firmino and Salah. And if you take Chelsea outside of the big six, only Huddersfield conceded in fewer shots than Southampton this season. And we've already spoken about Southampton a few times on the podcast this season in terms of their lack of goals. And it's just 9 in 11 games with three of those coming from penalties. And the expected goals last season at Anfield was only 0.83. And at St Mary's is only 1.53. So I quite like to take the unders here, but I'd rather take under 3 goals still at a competitive price just for that extra safety of another quarter of a goal. I think we should be able to get about around about 1.8. I think that's just a slightly better bet, but you can still take 2.75 at a bigger price if that was your preference.
Okay, so you can go for the bigger price, but you're more keen to go for under 3. Liverpool, Southampton, 3:00, Anfield on Saturday, live on Sky Sports Ireland. I don't know, you see Liverpool at home and you think goals, you think expected, it's going to be a really exciting attacking game. And now you've made me feel, I think I'll just go back to bed in the afternoon. I don't know.
International break as well. So yeah. As I say, you don't really know. And Klopp's been in hospital as well. So, you know, there's just too many sort of question marks about whether everyone's going to be on the same page. And as I say, historically, Liverpool struggled against Southampton. And I don't see Southampton making any strides going forward. I don't know why they appointed Pellegrino. He's more boring than Claude Puel, so it just seems a bizarre change in approach.
Why they sacked Puel is the thing that really confuses me. I mean, the guy finished 8th in the league with them, and they go, yeah, you're not good enough, cheerio, bye-bye. I know Jesse's going to make a point in a second, but before we do that, you're talking about former Southampton players going to Liverpool. Well, Nathaniel Klein looks as though he's going to be out for at least another 3 months, and Mane came back with an injury. They sent over a specific physio from Liverpool to go over with him to Senegal for international duty, and he's come back injured anyway, so I don't know if he's going to be able to be fit for the weekend, but hopefully he will, because when you've got Salah, Mane, Firmino, Coutinho. They're electric, but you take Mane out of the team, and even though Salah's got that pace, it just, it really has an effect on what Liverpool can do.
Yeah, I mean, I've not got the stats at hand, but I think from last time when I looked, Liverpool's average goals with without Mane goes down about 0.4, 0.5. So, yeah, that's quite a big differential.
Absolutely. And Jesse, the point you were going to make there?
Oh, no, I was just curious. I mean, Mark, you're in good form, obviously, and you've been calling the games well. Do you find yourself staking more at this point, like when you get to this point in the season? Or is it still sort of flat staking?
No real change. Doesn't really matter if you're in good form or not. I take every bet independently from the previous one. And overall, it's just a case of just staking more if there's more value, really. The two games I've mentioned here, I don't think they're sort of massive value. I think they're good bets. So I would just be sort of flat staking one point on each of them.
All right, makes sense. Mark O'Hare, we'll bring you in for our final game. It's the only game on Sunday, Watford against West Ham. It's a 4 p.m. kickoff, the betting on Matchbook from Jesse.
Watford, solid favorites. You'll get them about 6-5 in the 1-2, minus half a goal in the handicap, and the over-under's straight 2.5.
So it's the Super Sunday game, the only game, as I said, on Sunday, Watford against West Ham. We've already talked about Watford's manager and Everton desperately trying to get him. West Ham have had their own problems this season, and Bilic has been bid farewell to. And, well, they've got their new manager. They've got the man they wanted, David Moyes. He's come back in. He's a reborn man. He's going to take it back. He's rebooted. It's Moyes 2.0. He's going back to the Preston days. He's bringing in the enforcer with him as well, Stuart Pearce. It's going to be a reborn West Ham, Mark.
I can't really agree with any of that, but great build up.
just so we're clear, in case anybody's, and sometimes people on twitter.com take things seriously, the sarcasm meter in the studio has gone off the rails. All right, it blew up Simpson style.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I'll start with Watford, though, because we talked about Marco Silva, and Watford's start to the season was obviously superb. 4 wins, 3 draws, 1 defeat. It could have been more. But since then, they've fallen to 3 successive defeats. And the manner of that defeat away at Everton after leading 2-0 is going to rankle with them over the international break. I wanted to know why Watford are kind of struggling to turn these results or all these good positions into, you know, 3-pointers. And it's interesting that they've now lost 8 points from leading positions this season. That's a divisional high. And they're also really, really struggling from set pieces. They've conceded 11 goals from dead ball situations, 6 of which were from corners. So for all the sort of well-earned plaudits we've been giving Watford this season, I think they do deserve criticism for those records. And whilst they may look an attractive proposition coming into Sunday, they've only won once at Vicarage Road this season. So there's enough there for me to sort of shy away from Watford at the prices. Obviously, David Moyes is now in charge of West Ham. He's a bit of a rugged coach. And although Javier Hernandez is out injured, Andy Carroll is fit and available. So you can imagine what Moyes is going to be doing there. You know, he'll be using Carroll as a weapon, especially from set pieces. And you'd assume he's done his homework to see where Watford have been struggling. So my angle here is to look at the goals market. I think overs particularly is standing out at 1.97 at the 2.5 line. Watford have been, you know, no stranger to high scoring affairs. They've scored at least twice in 8 of their 11 games so far. 6 of their last 7 have seen 3 or more goals, and 4 of those 7 games actually featured over 3.5 goals as well. And obviously Moyes is quite a pragmatic cut. Pragmatic coach, but I'd be quite surprised if he's had enough time to sort of stem that bleeding from the defensive side of things coming into this match, because West Ham still have the worst defence in the league. Away from home, since the start of last season, they've kept just 3 clean sheets, and they've conceded 3 goals or more in 3 of their 6 away this season. Just the 1 win in 13 away games as well. So there's no reason why you'd want West Ham onside either. I've mentioned Javier Hernandez is out injured, which is a bit of a blow, but Andre Ayew's found a bit of form. Carroll's obviously going to be used effectively, you'd imagine, under Moyes. They've still got Sacco as well, who's available and to play from the bench. Crucially for West Ham as well, they're missing key players. Winston Reid's unlikely to be 100%. James Collins and Jose Font are major doubts or unavailable as well. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is I just don't trust either team defensively. And when you've got two teams who, you know, just have no real concept of defending leads or able to keep the opposition out, I always like to go overs. I think two defences is just as good an appetite for a high-scoring game as two strong attacks. So I think overs is the play here.
I can't believe you mentioned defence and then leave out the open goal, literally the open goal that is Joe Hart.
Clean sheet against Brazil, though.
Well, that's the thing. He's taken on the might of Brazil, kept a clean sheet. They didn't do their work on him. He can't save low to the left. That's when the problem is. They should have been focusing all their energy there. Wasn't Neymar just in tears again? Hasn't he cried in his last three press conferences?
Is it three? I saw the one before the game. And it was kind of embarrassing.
It's a lot of pressure.
I'd be able to handle the pressure if I was on $300,000 a week.
Isn't that your rate for the podcast? You need to talk to your agent to get this sorted. Okay, Jesse is going to sift through everything you've just said, lads. That's some fantastic analysis for the weekend. We've got to talk about four Premier League games. Mark Stitchcomb has depressed me. I was really looking forward to the Liverpool Southampton game. Not so much now, but I'm looking forward to the bet on it, though. And listen, hopefully it's going to be a profitable weekend for us. Mark Ayer, great to have you back on the show. Looking forward to chatting to you again soon. Mark Ayer from We Love Betting, and you can read more content from Mark Stitchcomb at insights.matchbook.com. Lads, we'll chat to you again next week.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, guys. Just a quick one, Em. I've written a World Cup preview today, so that should be out over the next couple of days, looking at the 32 teams ahead of next summer.
Oh, fantastic.
Nice one. Any outright bets?
Yes.
I mean, no, but are they in the article yet?
You'll have to read the article, I'm afraid.
Lovely. Can we get a spoiler? Do Spain feature in it?
Spain are in the article, yes.
Oh, of course they're in the article because they're one of the teams playing. I thought you were going to say, yeah, they could be a contender. Right, we got to get to the article, insights.matchbook.com. Get the insights of Mark Stitchcomb, who has now put up the outright betting for the World Cup. We're all going to Russia. No, we're not. It'll be an interesting one, to say the least. The two marks. Thanks so much, lads. We'll chat to you again very soon.
Cheers.
Horse racing now on the Matchbook Betting Podcast, and it's a warm welcome back to the show to the Betting Emporium's Neil Channing.
Hello.
So, Neil, the Cheltenham Open meeting is on this weekend. We've also got the Morgiana Hurdle at Punchestown with the potential return of former Cheltenham champion hurdle winner Faugheen. So it's a hugely exciting weekend of national hunt racing, and it's really ramping up a gear. The big betting race of the weekend, though, will be the Betfictor Gold Cup handicap chase at Cheltenham.
The Mackeson.
The old Mackeson, yeah. All the old names still retain, don't they?
It certainly is retained in my house. We're not calling it anything else around here.
It's the Mackeson Gold Cup. 2:25 at Cheltenham on Saturday afternoon. It's live on ITV and on Racing UK.
If Betfictor want to reopen my account, I'll start using their name.
Right,
oh,
there.
Die hard.
Neil, I think I'm allowed to buy like a whole pint of Mackeson at one time.
Neil,
the price changing.
Neil Channing, he can't be stopped. There's a market on this on Matchbook. Jesse, who leads the way?
There is Kyle Moore low around the 6-1 mark.
I'm sorry, who?
I'd have gone for Loth or Lock.
Yeah, I'd go for
it. Well. What makes you think you know how to say that?
I don't know. I have no idea.
The owners might want the more posh way of pronouncing it. Kyle Moore Lough.
I like the laugh. Kyle Moore Lough. How do you like it, Neil?
I think it's all right. It used to be trained by Kerry Lee. And she was having like a great time. She seems to be the darling of Twitter, doesn't she? Whenever she has like a minor winner at Taunton or something, she gets like 100 people tweeting how great she is. But I don't know, the horse kind of did all right for her, and then they moved it. But they moved it to the absolute king, Harry Fryer, who's a brilliant trainer.
He's a genius.
So he is a genius. Yeah, I like him a lot. So it was, it was running off of a similar kind of handicap mark. It's not like tumbled down the weights with her. I mean, I don't know whether she was slightly overfacing it. It ran in a race at Cheltenham last year over a bit too far a distance in January, and then it didn't run in the festival. And then they ran in the Melling Chase at Aintree. I'm not quite sure. I couldn't find out why that was, actually, that it didn't it must have been a setback, presumably, because he's run at Cheltenham a few other times. And I think he's a worthy favourite. And I certainly wouldn't put anyone off. It's an 18-runner race, and it's almost impossible to have a bad each way bet if you're betting first four. You're definitely getting the advantage as a punter with the place part of your each way bet with the traditional bookmaker. So I couldn't put you off that one at all. The other one that I thought of, there's a couple of others at the front of the market which I can certainly not put anyone off, really. Tully East, I'd imagine, is featuring on your betting slips, isn't it, Emmett?
Yeah, I was just going to mention him, actually. Yeah.
Trained in the old country, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that one won at Cheltenham last year in the Close Brothers, the novice handicap.
Yeah, that'd be the key for me, though, with it.
Yeah, and it was really, it hacked up, basically, yeah, that, didn't it, really? It's up £10 from that from the market run off that day, which, you know, seems fair enough. And it's had one run this year in a hurdle race where it was, probably just a non-buzzer ready for this one, really. I don't imagine they wanted to particularly ruin its handicap mark, so they probably just put it in a hurdle race and get it tuned up for this target. So, again, you know, I could understand how that could win, and I wouldn't put anyone off, and I certainly I'm not against it. Of the other shorter price ones, I saw a few people saying, David Pipe's right, you know, they're really back now, they're running much better. They're definitely running much better, and I'm not sure whether the stable's necessarily back. Starkitect actually won a race 2 weeks ago, but I wouldn't be falling over myself to back that one at around about 8-1. That would be one I was less keen on. I think if I had to back one at a single, not a single figure price, but kind of the sort of, maybe there's a few of these are sort of 8-10-1. So I guess a single figure price, it probably will be. I would back my old mucker Le Prezien, which was a horse that I had a right chunk on in the Grand Annual last year. And it was basically a bit outpaced, really. It ran off 1.46, and then it's come back this season and run in October, just a few weeks ago, in a handicap at Cheltenham over 2 miles. And it was beaten a neck off 1.44. I don't know if it's a bit kind of screwy, a bit quirky. I think it needs to be presented on the line a little bit. But I think it's basically a decent horse. It's running off 1.50. I think it's very solid. I think it's quite hard to kick out of the frame. The other one that I did have a bit of a look at just to see whether I could convince myself, and I failed to convince myself, was Guitar Pete, which was a Triumph hurdle horse a few years ago and is now running
for the late Desi Hughes.
Up north. Yes, exactly. It moved from Sandra Hughes over to Yorkshire. And it keeps coming second and third and stuff. And it has gone down the weights a fair bit. But I don't know. I don't really like backing the northern trained horses in the southern handicaps, particularly at Cheltenham. So for that reason, I crossed that one off. And I've ended up having a look. I haven't had a bet yet, but I might wait till the day. But I do quite like this. And it's an English trained horse trained by your old mucker, the dairy farmer himself, Mr. Colin Tizard.
Vicomte de Noyer.
And Vicomte de Noyer. I don't know whether you saw, you must have seen that race with Cogri in the other week.
Yeah.
At Cheltenham. Cogri, a horse that has been really unlucky with its jumping generally, but it absolutely hacked up in that race. I don't know whether you saw that race, but Vicomte de Noyer, rounding the turn, was absolutely cruising and looked definitely like it was going to feature in the finish. I can't remember. I think it traded around about 2.6 on the exchanges to win the race at that stage. And it ended up finishing seventh. So, I mean, obviously it just blew up, really. Hadn't run for a long time. Just kind of dropped away up the hill, really. But it came there absolutely bang cruising. And
Yeah, I mean, the horse definitely.
Well, I mean, what conditions would have to happen on the day for you to back it?
Well, you know, the race would have to be run. The race would have to be run on Saturday. I'd have to wake
oh, you're
up
in
time for the race. And the bookmakers would have to be open that day.
The matchbook exchange kind of needs to be, really. Yeah, everything needs to be placed.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So, I mean, this horse won a race on this card last year. I think it was the other race that's sponsored by Victor Chandler. It won that one off of 1.48, and on Saturday it runs off of 1.50. So it's reasonably well handicapped. I think it definitely stays a bit further. It'll get, you know, this horse gets 3 miles. It's a 2.5 mile race. The old Mackeson, and I think the ground at the moment there apparently is good to soft. I know they watered quite a bit before the last meeting, and then it went and rained. Hopefully teaching them a valuable lesson about watering early on in the week when you're uncertain about the weather. Maybe they might remember that for the rest of the year. This, I don't know whether they have watered a lot this week. The turf tracks is showing that it's good to soft at the moment, and the weather is set fair. We're recording this on Thursday night, and then it should be quite nice weather on Friday and Saturday. So I'd imagine it would just be good ground, really, which is kind of fast for jumping ground, and this horse will do all right on that. I don't think he really matters about the ground, but I think he, if anything, prefers it a little bit, you know, on top. So, I was a bit surprised when I saw the prices as 20-1. And, I sort of thought there were 6 or 7 I could back. They were all much of a muchness, and this one was double the price of all the others.
Neil Channing making a very convincing case for Colin Tizard's Vicomte de Noyer, who Brian could be an emotional winner as well, seeing as Alan Potts, the owner, passed away this week. So,
oh, good point. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, be a very emotional winner.
Difference, but there you go. He'll be very emotional in my house if it wins, I can tell you.
And the house of the charity.
Neil Channing, classy as always. Spoiler alert, it seems as though Jesse's going to be following this one in. I'll give you very briefly, I'll give you the three that are on my shortlist, Neil.
I'd like to bet Tully East is one of them, for
no,
sure.
No, it wasn't. I knocked him out.
My
it was.
God, what's happened there?
The first horse on my shortlist was Aqua Dude, and I decided to take him out just for sanity purposes because I lost so much on him last year. The second,
I can't be having Evan Williams, even though he's suddenly the Cheltenham trainer.
No way, no. The second, so that brought it down to two. Vicomte de Noyer was one.
Oh, wow, okay.
And the second was Starkitect.
Yeah, I don't know. I need a bit more convincing before I start following David Pipe again as a regular thing.
Yeah, but I'm gonna follow him in on Saturday. I know the money's shortening on him now, but I backed him during the week, and we'll try and keep the faith. He ran a great race at the festival. He was a bit unlucky. Good race at Aintree, winning comeback. Yeah, I'm going to have him in. But Vicomte de Noyer, by all accounts, is going to be the big one for us. Neil Channing, thanks so much for covering the NFL for us and for coming back to talk about the horse racing with us as well. We will chat to you again next week, my friend.
Indeed.
Cheers, Neil. I'm still going to back Starkitect. I know what he's saying, but I'm still going to back Starkitect for David Pipe. The Pipes used to clean up. I mean, I know you're an American horse racing better, but you'll be familiar, Jesse, with trainers who've dominated particular meetings. His father, Martin Pipe, used to dominate the open meeting at Cheltenham. You could just...
I have heard the name, yeah.
Yeah, you could just bet blindly, and it just hasn't really been the same. David's done very well. He's won a Grand National. He won a Cheltenham Festival race last season. He's back-to-back with On Tempo 2, so I think he can do it. Starkitect, definitely one for the shortlist. Okay. Brought together by their shared views on maximizing expected value, Matchbook have partnered with Reg, raising for effective giving. They are the charity of choice for many professional poker players. They use science and rational decision-making to maximize expected value when helping to reduce suffering in the world. And, of course, we use science and rational decision-making for our bets. So we've heard from our experts on the NFL, on the weekend's Premier League action, and from Neil just there on the horse racing as well. So take it away, Jesse. You've heard from the lads. What do you want to do? I've got to ask you, first of all, about the status of our very generous account that was given to us at the start of Season 2, £5,000 from Matchbook. It's all going to go to charity at the end of the season. What's the current status?
We have 4,428. We had a decent week last week. I mean, we broke about basically exactly even. But that win for Sweden offset, you know, a couple of the NFL losses.
Yeah, Cleveland Browns, never again. Okay, let's start with the NFL. So you've heard from Kian, from Brad, and from Neil. What were you really taking with there? Brad seemed to be very, very confident about a few.
I think we're going to get a lot of money in action today, this week. I think the guy's made a lot of good cases, and Brad's obviously been really hitting them, and for him to think that this is, I thought they had some good angles there, that this is a great week. So especially his big bet. So we're going to take Cincy Denver under 39.5 for 130. Denver minus 2.5 for 130. We're going to take the Vikings minus 2.5 for 130. That was Kian's bet. I thought he made a nice case there.
Yeah.
And then obviously the two other ones that Brad highlighted, Cleveland plus 7.5. We're just going to close our eyes and put those chips in on Cleveland. And then his big bet, I'm not sure. I'd be interested to know how much he's staking over his normal bet, but I think we'll just put 200 there on the under 37.
I said it during the NFL section, and I can almost hear Jesse May's excitement already that we're going to smash in this week. You were really going for it, though.
It just sounded like the guys have a lot of good bets.
Yeah, we got to do it. We got to do it. I'm with you 100%. I'm backing you. Of course, if it goes wrong, I deny all. And like, Jesse just lost the run of himself. I don't know. I tried to talk him out of it. I tried to talk him off the ledge, but he couldn't be stopped. No, I'm loving it. There's a lot of confidence there. So hopefully this goes well. So that's the NFL. Then we heard from the two marks on the Premier League. What really interested you there?
So I think we'll take Crystal Palace minus a quarter for 80. Which is what we've been staking on the Premier League late this season, which is about 2%. Arsenal Tottenham under 3 goals for 80, and the Liverpool Southampton under 3 goals for 80 as well, trying to get around 1.833. I think we'll pass that last game, the Watford West Ham.
Yeah, I can completely see where you're coming from there. Watford West Ham, I get that. Also, just David Moyes. Oof. Anyway, poor old David, he's getting it from all angles, including the Matchbook Betting Podcast. Available to download on Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud, David. You can also give us your thoughts on the horse racing. So Neil was talking about Le Parisien, first of all, but he was really, really keen on Vicomte de Nora. So I would suspect that this is a horse that we're looking at in the place market and in the win market.
That's an interesting idea. I guess we'll have to see how the place market forms. I mean, usually, it seems to me that even though there's a lot of variance there when you bet the outright, if you're going to bet the place market, aren't you better off finding a place that's giving you that quarter each way? So I guess doesn't that mean you'll want to get, what is it, 5-1 or better?
Yeah.
On the place market in order to make a bet. So we can have a look and see what it is.
Yeah, if it's there, Jesse, for sure, take it. But obviously,
as far as the exchange goes, I think if I was just looking at that Kelly calculator, so if we get 20-1 on this horse, and he's really a 12-1, we should still be betting about 3% according to the Kelly calculator. So I think we're gonna put up 130 on this Vicomte de Nora at 20-1 and really try and it hit a big one.
I tell you what, if this thing comes in, we're gonna be dripping in gravy. We're gonna have made an absolute fortune.
Hope so.
Right, that's it. I'm looking forward to it. This is a really exciting weekend of betting. Suddenly I'm energized. I'm pumped for the weekend. Week 11 in the NFL previewed for you. The Premier League returns after the international break. Oh, Ireland. And
I think you have to say, realistically, if you're betting on a horse at 20-1 and you're getting incredible value because it's a 12-1 shot, that still means it's only going to win something like, 1 in 12 times, 7% of the time.
Yeah, 7% of the time. But no, I would agree with you and would say that I would rather be with him than against him. And particularly, Neil seems so keen on him as well. And you've got Colin Tizzard, who's in form, Brian Cooper, and it's an emotional, as I explained earlier on, it's quite emotional that horse is running at the weekend too. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Cheltenham Open Meeting. So we've got the NFL Week 11, we've got the Premier League, and we've got the Cheltenham Open Meeting as well. This is a super weekend of sport. I hope you've enjoyed this week's show. Thanks to all our guests, to Kian Fahey from ESPN, to Brad Allen, Neil Channing, and the two Marks, Mark Stitchcombe and Mark O'Hare. Some fantastic analysis, as always, from the lads. Hopefully, whether you are taking some of the information, disseminating it in your own way and placing your bets, or if you're following us in blindly, Hopefully it's going to be a profitable weekend for you. If you like the show, a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts would be much appreciated. It just helps to spread the word about the show. And as Colin Murray says on Fighting Talk, tell all your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues about the Matchbook Betting Podcast. We'd really appreciate it. From Jesse May.
Thanks, Emmett. Have a great weekend.
And for me, Emmett Kennedy, have a great weekend. As Jesse said, we'll chat to you again next week on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. God bless.